Good Life, the Bad Life, show number 5 from BigFoamyHead.com. Today we're going to talk about standby beers and some barbecued salmon. Been having bad luck with beer lately, mainly trying to find some good beer. I've been out of town, as you might have heard on the last show, if you've listened to the last show. Not one of my better ones, but, you know, we're just getting started here. So, my bad luck with finding beers has been because I've been in towns and restaurants and bars where there just isn't much of a selection. And I've come to realize that there is a small group of beers that I'm referring to as my standby beers, and I have fortunately been having good luck with these standby beers, and that's what we're going to talk about today, is the standby beer. What exactly is a standby beer? That is a beer that is not one of the big three beers, but it's ones that you can usually find in your better restaurants and bars. We're also looking forward to good luck with today's recipe, barbecued salmon tacos. This is a recipe that's inspired by Bobby Flay and the Food Network. I was wanting to make something a little lighter and something not pork. And had good luck finding an excellent recipe, but I had a little bit of bad luck in the preparation. I'll tell you about that in a minute. I've had really good luck with the music for this show. My source for most of the shows so far has been music.download.com, and the background music that you heard at the start of the show and you're listening to right now underneath is from the Essex Blues Band, and this is called Short and Sweet Blues. They have many other selections in there, and I encourage you to go to download.com, click the music tab, and under the blues category, look for them. And I've also had some bad luck just finding the time to get back to the show and working on fighting the cold off right now. So before we get into the cooking and drinking discussions, I want to say thanks to all the people listening via iTunes, and encourage you to visit the website, www.bigfoamyhead.com, and give me some feedback. Whereas I'm doing this kind of in the dark, I'm just assuming I know what people want to hear and what they don't want to hear. And I'd like to hear from you. Each of the shows has a comment section, and please speak up. Let me hear what you like. Would you want to hear more talk about beer, less about cooking, or the other way around? Use music or don't use music? I've noticed that several of the other podcasts that are focused on beer are asking the same question. Some podcasts feature live original music, and others just kind of do what I'm doing and bring you PodSafe or music that's available on the web for free downloads. And it's one of those questions. You know, talk is great, but sometimes you need to break it up a little, especially with some of the people, and I consider myself one of them, who are not the most professional of audio folk. So visit the website. Again, it's bigfoamyhead.com, and let me know what you think. So I was talking about the beer situation and my standby beers. And this is the problem, as I see it. There is a definite lack of beer in bars and restaurants across the U.S. Bars and restaurants tend to cut corners, watch cost, do their best they can to keep their costs down so their profit margins up. And one of the places where they really make a lot of money is in their beer selection, especially draft beer. Cheaper the beer, more you charge for it, greater the profit. So it's a real racket, and it's only when you find a bar or a restaurant that actually is concerned about how their beer tastes is that they're going to spend a little more, get a better beer in, and of course they probably charge you a little more for it, but there's a big difference in the taste. So let's look at the majority of the beers that are found in bars. You've got the big three, Anheuser-Busch and all of their products. You've got the Miller Brewing Company, and then you've got Coors. And just to give you an idea of the size of these people, I did a little research and found out that Anheuser-Busch, who is the biggest of them, they produce approximately 100 million barrels of beer every year. Now, to put that in perspective, a microbrew, which is a regional, local beer that you'd find, a microbrew, to be classified as a microbrew, you must produce less than 15,000 barrels. So that's just an infinite, tiny percentage of this. So how did Budweiser and its kin come to have such a dominance on the market? Well, you got to look back in history. 1876, Louis Pasteur invented pasteurization, which kept things fresher. And everybody knows pasteurization and they associate it with milk, but that's where you're wrong. It was actually invented for the beer industry to keep the beer fresher longer, because at that point in time, hauling beer any form or of distance was virtually impossible. The beer would go stale and go bad after certain amount. So you got pasteurization, and then at the turn of the century, around 1900, you had vast improvements in refrigeration. So all these little local breweries that used to be around making quality beer for everybody to drink that was in the vicinity, they kind of got pushed aside by mass production methods and refrigeration. So breweries such as Anheuser and later Anheuser-Busch came about, and they were able to squeeze these people out. Well, then came Prohibition. And of all of the thousands of local breweries that were gradually being squeezed out by the bigger breweries, well, Prohibition just kind of killed it for everybody. So Prohibition comes to be repealed, and the little breweries just really didn't come back. And things kind of slogged around until about 1980. And the curious thing about 1980 was there was a high and a low. At 1980 was the highest year for consumption of beer in the United States. It happened because all the baby boomers were of legal drinking age, and it's just people were drinking beer like crazy. On the flip side of that, it was the absolute lowest mark in time for microbrews. They had just basically given up because they were squeezed out by all the big breweries. So then you see kind of a convergence, and apparently the baby boomers, they were already there in the drinking age, and the lack of drinkers starts to decline a little bit. And basing this on a study I read that showed up to 1996, so I don't have anything for like the last almost 10 years, but you see that it starts trending downwards. And again, on the other side, you start seeing microbrews starting to trend up. So it really wasn't so much that America just completely lost its taste for beer and just wanted to drink a lot of the swill that's passed off. It was just a coincidence at the time. There's a lot more people, and just kind of drove the numbers down. That coupled with just the general lack of interest in trying to make money by brewing beer. So now we come full circle to today. You've got a lot of people who are really looking for better things. Shipping methods have improved greatly. There's virtually nothing that you can't get literally overnight from anywhere in the U.S. Brewers, microbrewers are able to ship and have much better distribution. And then we have these emerging groups that I don't know if there's a name for it, but I call them macro brewers. And when I say that, it means they're bigger than a microbrewery, and they're shipping all over the place, but they're a quality beer. If you heard a couple of shows ago, we talked with Rogue Breweries, and they're one of my personal favorites. They are a considerably larger than a microbrew, yet they're nowhere near the size of any of the big three beers. So they're a good example of a craft beer, a macro beer. So coming back around to what I said about my standby beer. Well, I just can't stand drinking Bud or Miller or even a Coors. As I mentioned before, I'll never turn one down if it's cold and I'm outside on a hot day. But given my preferences, and especially if I'm paying for it, I'm going to buy something that I like. So here's my standby beers: Corona, Newcastle, and Sierra Nevada. Now, you can find Corona just about anywhere these days, and it's being touted on the on the television as, you know, an alternative to all the beers. Well, it's a Mexican cerveza, and it's not really it's not an ale, it's a lager, and it's definitely better than a Budweiser or a Miller. It is a different sort of beer. It's brewed in cerveza style, so you got a little bit more taste, but still, all things considered, it's not that much of a beer. The other two, Newcastle and Sierra Nevada, those are actually both ales. They're not lagers. So everything we've talked about so far has been a lagered beer brewed Pilsner style. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, it's a hoppy beer, and that is of all my standbys and any beer. That's one of my more favorite beers. You can usually find this. I noticed that Sierra Nevada is cropping up more and more. I noticed on their website they refer to obviously the pale ale as their leading beer, but I was reading in here some notes about it. It's 5.6% alcohol, so it's got a kick to it, more than a Budweiser. Made with two row pale malts, bitterness units 37, which is technically lower than a Corona, yet it tastes a little more what people would refer to as bitter, but it's not a bitter, it's a hop. And it's very good beer. And I read in there that their brewery is now able to produce 800,000 gallons. So that's obviously far, far larger than a microbrew, but nowhere near the others. Okay, so we've established in the Sierra Nevada, while fairly small and available at a lot of the better places, it's nowhere near in comparison. So that's one of the things I like about it. The other, as I mentioned before, it's an ale. It's not a lager, so therefore it has more taste. And the other thing about it is it's not pasteurized. The beer is going to go bad if it's not delivered fresh enough. I believe they do the final fermentation in the bottle. It's got a good alcohol bit to it, so it's a good beer. It goes very well with many, many foods. If I'm drinking, eating something that's not quite as spicy, or sometimes even if I am, I go with the Sierra Nevada because it's got a little bit more tartness and flavor to it. Now, the other beer, last beer that I mentioned as a standby, was a Newcastle, and you can find Newcastles all over the place too. Newcastle is like one of the best-selling beers in the UK, and it is also an ale. It is a brown ale. It has not very much hops at all that you can taste, and the yeast that they use is quite interesting. It has a very yeasty bread-like flavor. The first time I had one of these, it was like drinking a biscuit. So I like drinking Newcastles with spicy foods. It pairs real well with that. And that's one of those that if I can't get a Sierra Nevada, I try and get a Newcastle. If I can't get a Newcastle, I try and get a Corona. And if I can't get a Corona, I'm screwed. You know, I'll drink whatever they got on tap. And so that's what I refer to as the standby beers. And I think if you look on the menus, that you'll find a couple other beers popping up. Now, you notice I did not mention Sam Adams. And the reason is because Sam Adams is also a lager, and they hop it up quite a bit. But lagers just leave this nasty metallic taste in my mouth, and Sam Adams is no exception to that. I know a lot of people just rave over Sam Adams, but they're rapidly leaving the macro brew, and it would not surprise me at all to see that their market share wasn't increasing as much, where they were going to give the Coors people a run for their money, or if they weren't acquired by one of the big brewers. So enough about them. All right, on the changing channels to the cooking, we're going to go through preparing the barbecued salmon tacos. This is a very good dish. I had a few moments while I was cooking it that I thought things were going to hell in a handbasket, but managed to pull it out of the fire. And That's keeping with the good luck, bad luck theme of this show. We're going to take a music break and listen to a song called, oddly enough, Good Luck, Bad Luck by Bernie Clark and the Rhythm Sharps.
know you're bound to hurt. That's why that good luck makes me nervous. It's a damn sure sign I'm about to lose. Bought a brand new Cadillac back in 1982. Man, that car, the bar, and a TV set, man, it wasn't nothing that ride wouldn't do. Well, along comes this fox. She says, I like your wheels. We went for a ride. When I woke up, man, I was right there. On my heels, that's why that good luck makes me nervous. Bad luck give me the blues. Cause every time I start up winning, that's a damn sure sign I'm about to lose.
Bit of good luck, bad luck, Bernie Clark and the Rhythm of Sharks. And now we're going to talk about going from sharks to salmons, and barbecued salmon specifically. I saw a show, one of Bobby Flay's cooking shows, and he made this barbecued salmon, and it was just the best looking thing. It was some fellow on there who lived on the coast, and basically they just sliced the salmon right off of the fish and threw it onto the grill. And, of course, the Mississippi River's not really known for its salmon, so I don't have access to that. So I went to the grocery store instead. I was looking for something a little lighter, and I wanted to make something that was light and yet tangy, keeping with the barbecue theme. And I was looking for a little citrusy, so I started thinking about the whole barbecue, and it was on a beach, and so I was thinking more Caribbean-style barbecue. The other thing about it is we're trying to watch the weight around here, and salmon is a great choice for that. It's very light, all things considered. It's high in omega-3. It's an excellent food for you health-wise, but I wanted to dress it up a little bit with barbecue. So I paired it with some fat-free sour cream, some fat-free sharp cheddar, and some low-carb tortillas. So my overall calorie count for this dish was very low. Salmon is one of those fish that there is not just one salmon. There's many of them. And if you live in the northern part of the country, especially along the coast, you probably have your own opinions about it. Well, I take what I can get around here. And the store had a couple of different types of salmons, and the one I ended up going with was an Alaskan Keta or Keta salmon, spelled K-E-T-A, and it was leaned towards the milder end of the scale. It didn't have the intensity of flavor as a wild salmon. So I got the salmon, pretty much anyone would work. Washed the fillet off, and I got a pretty good size fillet. It was probably about a foot wide. And still has some tiny little bones in it. So I guess the Keta or Keta salmon is not a real thick-fleshed fish. Washed it off and sprinkled some of my basic rub on it. The basic rub is found in one of the earlier shows. The recipe is on the website, bigfoamyhead.com. And basically consists of paprika, onion powder, garlic powder, black pepper, some cumin, brown sugar, and coarse salt, and ground black pepper, and a little bit of cayenne throw in. So I rubbed that all over the fish, kind of massaged it into the flesh. Set my grill on high. I'm not using the smoker this time. I'm using my gas grill, and I got it cranked up pretty good. I turned all the burners on and got it hot. It got around 450 degrees. If you're using a charcoal grill, which would give it even more flavor, you're going to have to use a lot of charcoal, and it's really going to be sort of a waste because the fish cooks quick. So if you're using charcoal, have some other things laying around to cook. But what you want to do is get the coals hot, stacked enough, where you, if you were holding your hand about 4 inches away from the fire, you could not hold it for more than a count of one. You want this thing hot. So you got our fish. We've got it all cleaned off. Got the basic rub rubbed in. We want to put it onto the grill, skin side down, not flesh side down. So it's going to go on there, and that skin is going to char, and it's going to cook, protect the flesh from burning, and it's going to cook the fish pretty good. You want to let that cook. If you're using regardless of the grill, put a cover on it. So you're not going to really have any flare-ups because it doesn't drip a lot of fat. And you're going to cook it for between 3 to 5 minutes. I went 5 minutes. This is all going to be dependent on the thickness of your fish. And check on it after about 4 minutes. You can see the cooking process. You can see where it is getting progressively lighter from the underside of the fish up. And if you cook it a little bit over the time where you should have flipped it, you'll see some of the oil start to exude out of the top of the fish. And that's okay. It's still fine. But once you've got it cooked a little more than halfway through by looking at the color, what you want to do is put a little barbecue sauce on the top of it. Now, I did not put a recipe for any barbecue sauce. I could have made up one, and on the Bobby Flay site, it had this horribly difficult recipe for barbecue sauce. So I just took a shortcut. I bought a bottle of barbecue sauce, and if I felt like dressing it up, I could have added a little something here and there. But I bought this bottle of Emeril's tropical barbecue sauce, and it was great. If you find some Cajun or Caribbean jerk marinade, you could use that too. All you want to do is use this as a kind of a sealant and a finishing sauce for the fish. So it's going to have a little bit of impact on the flavor, but not a whole lot. Personally, I would recommend the Emerald sauce. It was very good, very flavorful, and it took no more effort than unscrewing the top, so you can't beat that. So we've got our fish. It's cooked for about 5 minutes now, and I take my Emerald sauce, spread it liberally over the top of the fish. Now here's where I ran into my bad luck. As I mentioned, this piece of fish was about a foot or so long. Well, salmon flakes quite easily. The skin charred and basically just separates from the fish. So I got to flip it over, and the thing started breaking in half, started breaking in pieces. So I had to go run quickly inside the house, get a second spatula, and execute this extremely dangerous double spatula flip the fish. By that time, I knocked the skin off, which that was okay. I was still cooking it on that side anyway, so I just went ahead and pulled the skin off and tossed it aside. And let it cook, put the grill lid back down. I let it cook for another 3 minutes or so. I could have put some sauce on the exposed side, but I didn't. I just put sauce on one side. I let it cook for about, as I mentioned, 3 to 5 minutes more, till I judged it was ready. Pulled it off the grill, flipped it back over. The sauce had got a little crusty, and it was just perfect. What it turned out, I dodged the bad luck bullet and had some good luck. Took it inside and let it rest for a few minutes. I got a little bit of oil seeped out of the fish into the bottom of the plate, not a big deal. And I proceeded just to flake it with a fork. Got my tortilla, sprinkled some of the fat-free cheddar, warmed the tortillas up so that the cheese melted a little bit on them. And then I layered my fish on, put on a layer of fish, a dash more of the sauce, and I had bought some cilantro and some limes. That was in the event that the sauce wasn't quite as citrusy and Caribbean as I wanted. You can always add some cilantro and limes, and personally I'd recommend you add it anyway. So instead of lettuce, I used fresh cilantro. Cilantro is pretty cheap, gives a great flavor, and really kicks it up. So I added that on, squeezed a lime wedge on it, and then put a little bit of sour cream on it. And that was it. It was excellent. We served that along with some tabbouleh salad, which, of course, is nowhere near the Caribbean, but it was another light kind of salad that I picked up at the salad bar. Some of the Caribbean rice that's available would be excellent with this. Black beans would be great with this. Fried bananas or plantains. So it came out real well. I was very pleased with it. And the total cooking time for preparing this fish from washing to serving was probably 20 minutes tops. It was just no time at all. So if you're looking for something that is very fast, very healthy, very flavorful, this is something that just can't be beat, and I'm sure we'll be having it again a lot more often around this house. So I'm going to call this show done, and I'm hoping to pick up some beers. I've got some folks bringing me beer from Germany, and we're going to be traveling here in the next few weeks. So hopefully I'll have a lot more interesting beers and beer conversations coming up on the next show. And we're going to close it out with the third guest from Download.com, the Skyla Burrell Blues Band, and a mean-hearted woman. And we'll see you next time.